Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the former Premier League and Ireland midfielder Matt Holland, and TalkSport's Alex Crook. As, despite Lukaku firing blanks, it all gets a little bit Spursy at Stamford Bridge. Also, City's winning run comes to an end at Saints as fans accused of being sinners. Everton close in on Vita Pereira and Brentford get a new Ericsson. Yeah, you have to be a 90s child to get that joke. Plus, United leave it late, Newcastle win, it's great, and Gerrard revels in being clickbait. Every game reviewed on the ultimate review of all the weekend's Premier League action. It's TalkSport's Game Day Podcast.
This is Game Day.
Well, it wasn't a weekend of great games, but the odd great moment and some isolated major issues, really, at Goodison Park, at Southampton, Brentford, even the Watford game as well. The Spurs fans with Rudiger in that match as well. So we had a little bit of fan involvement, which wasn't welcome. We spent so long being desperate for fans to come back, and then a small minority end up causing probably more issues than is palatable in one weekend, Matt.
It was a bizarre weekend, really, wasn't it? We've seen all sorts. The floodlight failure at Watford, the drone stop play at Brentford, fans throwing things in the Aston Villa Everton game. Norwich scored three. That's something we don't see very often. Man City dropped points. Plenty of VAR controversy. It's been just another weekend in the Premier League, isn't it?
It really has. And we're going to have a new addition to the Premier League, it looks like. We've mentioned about Wayne Rooney being talked about, but for the Everton job, Vita Pereira is a name that's emerged over the last 24 hours. We understand quite strongly that it's likely that he will be not only spoken to, but offered the job in the not-too-distant future. What do you know about it, and what do you know about him, Crookie?
Yeah, I think he's already been interviewed by the Everton board. He was at the back end of last week, came across well in that interview, impressed Farhad Moshiri, the Everton owner. I think he's been on their radar once or twice before, including when they eventually hired Carlo Ancelotti. He was quite close to getting the job then. He's won league titles in Portugal with Porto, in Greece as well, was most recently at Fenerbahce. That didn't work out particularly well, but he's certainly been on the radar of English clubs, not just Everton, I think at Arsenal as well. When they parted company with Unai Emery, he was certainly seen as a possible contender. So he's someone who's won nine trophies over the course of his career, and I think his track record in European football is certainly an attractive proposition for Moshiri. I guess maybe it highlights a lack of contenders with Premier League experience, but listen, it's a step into the unknown. Let's see how it goes.
I'm not sure he's going to have to worry too much about that European experience for a while after what I saw on Saturday lunchtime. We'll get to that. We'll get to all the matches very shortly. We'll have some news about Christian Eriksen as well. Looks like he's going to Brentford, which is great. It's a brilliant feel-good story. I wonder if the Everton fans are happy with this appointment. Obviously, it wasn't particularly great at the weekend. They need a structure, not only a manager. They need a structure around a manager as well. So there is a lot of work to do there. And it looks as well as if there's a lot of work to do at Tottenham.
It ain't It's over till it's over. There's no league like the Premier League to tell you that.
You wonder how long Claudio Ranieri will have to turn things around. Plenty of boos at the end here. Full time at Vicarage Road. Watford 0, Norwich 3.
Ball towards the far post. Oh, it's flicked on by Buendia and across the goalkeeper and in.
Brentford 1, Wolves 2, and another excellent goal. The visitors have hit back through Ruben Neves.
Shelvey around the wall and in! Jonjo Shelvey gives Newcastle hope of salvation. They're a massive 3 points, but then there are gargantuan 3-point hauls. That's exactly what Eddie Howe and Newcastle United have got.
Oh!
It's in the back of the net. Right at the death. Manchester United get the winning goal.
Marcus Rashford just sneaks in at the back stick.
It's taken by De Bruyne. It's an outswinger. It's a great chance and Laporte has equalised. A free header.
Maybe opening the door tomorrow for Liverpool who go to Crystal Palace.
Liverpool have finally won this. They have got the 3 points. And I suppose the title race, guys, is back on. It's Palace 1, Liverpool 3.
Chelsea who entertain Spurs to revive their title hope.
It's Chelsea 2, Tottenham 0. A fantastic finish from Thiago Silva.
They finish Arsenal 0, Burnley 0. The Gunners remain winless in 2022 and miss the chance to move back into the top four.
Brighton have had a very good opportunity and they might have one here from Danny Welbeck. And Brighton have equalised.
Well, Tottenham played a back four. Antonio Conte, I don't think, has played a back four in any game for the last 5 years. Why did he change to a back four and did it work?
Well, it certainly didn't work, did it? And I know some Chelsea fans were a bit concerned about how they might line up when the team sheets came in. And actually, I was more alarmed by the Tottenham side and the players that he took off, actually, Tanganga and Sessegnon, two players who arguably probably shouldn't have started the game in the first place. And again, it highlights the real gap in quality between those top three teams and Tottenham, who certainly want to be the fourth best team. I'm not sure that's going to happen this season. In fact, Antonio Conte, after the game, came out and said it could take 3 years for Tottenham to bridge that gap.
Well, listen, one thing that Chelsea managed to do was, despite the fact that Lukaku didn't really have his shooting boots on, he missed a good chance really early in the game. They ended Tottenham's 9-match unbeaten Premier League run under new boss Antonio Conte. And it was quite deflating for Spurs, I think, Matt, bearing in mind that Chelsea themselves actually haven't been playing particularly well over the last couple of weeks.
No, it's been the last three games that they've played against Spurs, I think it's just highlighted the gap, really. You know, Antonio Conte said it might take 3 years to catch Chelsea up. Well, the three games that Chelsea have played Spurs in recent weeks highlights the gap that Tottenham have got to catch up, because in the Cup, I thought they were streets ahead of Spurs. I've only seen the highlights of the game today because I was travelling back from Crystal Palace against Liverpool. So I don't quite know the ebb and flow of the game today, but the two games in the Cup, Chelsea were miles ahead of Spurs. So there's so much work for Antonio Conte to do to try and bridge that gap.
It was fascinating, really, because Chelsea went into the game, I think, quite downbeat. A difficult time in midweek where they drew with Brighton and they struggled in their previous matches as well to find a sort of goal-scoring rhythm. They weren't particularly good at Manchester City last weekend. But there's nothing like a visit from Tottenham to cheer everybody up at Chelsea. I mean, this is the fourth time they've beaten them this season. Sorry, I've started to lose count. Ziyech wonder strike was absolutely sensational. It's worthy of winning any contest. Callum Hudson-Odoi did very well, actually, jinking past Japhet Tanganga in order to feed Ziyech on the edge of the area. But that strike was out of the topmost draw.
It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What I would say is, on the flip side, they could have defended it better. Get tighter. Don't show him inside. He had acres of space when he came inside. Nobody closed him down. So he had time to pick his spot. But wow, what a finish. I mean, that really is the postage stamp. It couldn't have been any closer to that top corner. It was a brilliant finish. Spurs didn't defend it well, I admit. But wow, what a goal.
Yeah, Romelu Lukaku spurned a fine chance for Chelsea just minutes into the contest. That sort of set the tone for his evening, I'm afraid. And it didn't get much better for him. But there was a couple of VAR incidents as well that probably need discussing, including the Harry Kane goal, which was overturned for a push on Thiago Silva. Now, we were watching it together, and I think both of us felt that it probably wasn't really a foul, was it? It probably shouldn't have been ruled out, or you now changing your mind?
I'm wavering on
that. Is that because Roy Keane told you to change your mind?
No, I've seen it a few times since, and there is contact. It's minimal contact, but there is a movement of Harry Kane's arm. Listen, it's harsh.
Matt's not having it.
Clearly, Matt doesn't agree, but... Listen, it's a shame because that could have altered the course of the game. I mean, that was as good as it got for Tottenham, really. But yeah, Matt, you're shaking your head. You agree with Gary Neville as opposed to Roy Keane?
I'm on Gary's side on this one. Look, Thiago Silva used all his experience. He felt a slight contact on his back and he went to ground. So he has bought that free kick, Thiago Silva. That's the way I see it. Harry Kane, in hindsight, might think, I didn't need to put my hand up. Perhaps I shouldn't have put my hand up, because then... I would have had a free run at goal. But Thiago Silva was waiting, felt the little touch and went to ground. So I'm more on Gary Neville's side than Roy Keane's on this one.
Didn't particularly like the challenge by Matt Doherty on Molong Sarr, actually. And I thought that he was very lucky to escape without a sending off. I thought that was a dangerous challenge and it was unnecessary for him to place his left foot where he did. And I don't really understand why the official wasn't asked to go and at least review it on the monitor.
Agreed. In fact, over the course of the weekend, I've been a little bit shocked by some decisions with the VAR, quite a few decisions actually with the VAR. I think there was one in the Burnley-Arsenal game, Westwood on Tierney. Armstrong got away with one a little bit against Man City, Stuart Armstrong, when he went led with his studs as well. And that Doherty one as well, it's hard to defend him really. I think that was a red card. And then I was at Liverpool Palace, where there's a penalty decision that we'll talk about a little bit later as well. So VAR has had its usual controversy over this weekend.
Yeah, well, Crookie's got a theory about this, haven't you?
I have, and I've mentioned it before on the podcast. VAR either goes swimmingly in the majority of games over a weekend, or it has a complete meltdown in multiple matches. And I think this game week, we've certainly seen a case for the latter.
Yeah, it has just sort of snowballed. It started badly and just got worse and worse and worse. Brilliant goal for Chelsea, the first one. The second one, I thought Mount's delivery was exquisite, absolutely brilliant. And Thiago, excellent header. He's such a threat in the penalty box from set pieces, he really is.
Not sure about the haircut though, Mason Mount.
Mason Mount. Oh, he's doing a bit of 90s business.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No, I can see where it's going. It hasn't got there yet. It's got a way to go, but he's definitely styling himself new kids on the block. Early 90s, I think. Antonio Conte, lots of work to do. Thomas Tuchel, I think, will be very happy with what happened at Stamford Bridge, especially bearing in mind that they weren't in fine fettle beforehand. But they do need to get Lukaku moving. And we watched the game and he just doesn't seem to have the technique almost, the motivation to get into these places that he's supposed to get into. And when he does get into good positions, he rushes the effort, or he hasn't got the ability to bring it under control. Is that all mental, Matt, or is there a technical issue there too?
You know, I analysed the game against Man City, and he had 20 touches in the game against Man City, and yet he could easily have scored a couple of goals as well because of his movement. And you know, when he is at his best, I think it's strange actually, because for someone his size, he's at his best running towards the goal, so running in behind rather than coming to the ball. His best moments in that Man City game came when he got into position in between the two centre backs and was looking to get in behind the Man City defence. A couple of times he got overhit and he had that chance when he went through, and there's a really good save by Ederson. But at 20 touches, his hold up play was terrible. He kept giving it away. It's a difficult one. Is it Lukaku's fault not making the runs? Is it the Chelsea players who can't find him? I think there are times when they can hit him earlier. I think he pulls off in some really good positions, tries to pull into that far post for delivery from wide areas. They've missed Reece James and Ben Chilwell in that respect in delivering balls into the box. Can you imagine if Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold had been playing for Chelsea and the delivery that they get in for Lukaku and the movement he does make?
But today, Matt, actually, Ziyech was putting in pinpoint deliveries time after time after time, and Lukaku had dipped underneath them, or he mistimed his run, or he didn't quite get on the end of them. So that argument is correct, because they have had to change the way they played, and they changed the way they played completely today. They played 4-2-3-1, really. But he just doesn't seem to have his mojo.
No, he looks massively short on confidence. He's had his issues as well with Thomas Tuchel. I think Thomas Tuchel dealt with it really well, actually. You know, by leaving him out, putting him on the bench, discipline him in that way. And I think Thomas Tuchel dealt with that well. So he's had his issues as well, off the field as well as on it. And he's maybe trying too hard, maybe trying to impress too much. But he does look a little short on confidence at the moment.
Well, Newcastle would look pretty short on confidence until they got all 3 points away at Leeds United, a 1-0 win. I think Ian Danter, in commentary, I was listening on TalkSport 2, said some wins are big, some wins are massive, and some wins are gargantuan. And this one falls into that category. It certainly does, but it is only a second win in 21 matches. I mean, listen, Shelvey's goal has got a lot to be answered for as far as the goalkeeper is concerned. He was incredibly poor, I thought, on that particular incident. But they deserved it, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And I think as well as the win was much needed, so was the clean sheet. And that defence has taken a bit of a bashing over the course of the season, both in terms of centre-forwards they've come up against and indeed on podcasts like this. But I think the two central defenders probably produced their best 90 minutes of the season. Kieran Trippier was outstanding. He is going to prove to be a really good addition. And I think Chris Wood as well made an impact. He won 15 aerial duels in that victory against Leeds. That's a record in Premier League matches this season. So I think you can see that maybe his arrival will change the way that they like to play. There will be more additions between now and the end of the transfer window. And I think psychologically, in terms of attracting new players, the fact they've got this victory now will probably help in that department as well.
Yeah, and Perry Groves was talking about him lacking a little bit of confidence and not looking 100%, but actually Eddie Howe was of the view that he made an incredibly positive contribution without the ball and helping them have a platform on which to build. And I think sort of somewhere between the two, you're getting the perfect Chris Wood. And as time goes on, he will get a chance and he will score a goal, and that will help them. And obviously, Constantine up at the bottom of the Premier League this week because two teams won, and that doesn't happen very often down there, does it?
Do you know what? I've been in that position before, bottom of the table. You get a win, you come into the dressing room after the match, you look around, and everyone else has won. You get beat, honestly, and you look around. Everyone else has got beat. You think, oh, if we'd have won that one, we'd have been out of the relegation zone. So it's just the way it goes sometimes. Look, that's a massive win for Newcastle, a huge win. I thought Shelvey in midfield was excellent as well. What about the game next up for them? Everton. I mean, what a game. Newcastle now against Everton. They're off to Saudi Arabia, I think, Newcastle. Going to get a bit of warm weather. Chance to recover, actually, because I think they picked up a couple of injuries in the game against Leeds as well. So it gives them a bit of a chance to recover now, bit of warm weather, and come back and face Everton, who, of course, is the team that Eddie Howe supports as well. So that makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, Victor Pereira obviously will be in charge by that game, because this is obviously not going to take place until after the Brentford match that Everton have got in the FA Cup, because the FA Cup is... not next week, the week after. There's an international break, so there's a bit of a delay between fixtures. So it's a big delay for Newcastle United, because of course they're already out of the FA Cup.
Yeah, and they're actually playing a game against the current leaders of the Saudi top division, but there won't be any coverage of that match. It will effectively be a training match taking place behind closed doors. Even the club not permitted to broadcast any live footage or highlights. That's in accordance with FA and Premier League rules. So I think initially maybe the owners wanted to try and show off their new addition and get some fans in the stadium. That isn't going to happen.
Okay. Well, it's a good victory for them. Leeds, obviously. I don't know. Are they back in it again? They were out of it. They're in it. It's a bit of a grey area, isn't it? I think the next few weeks are going to be really important determining whether or not we're going to have a bit of a tighter, more inclusive race to stay in the Premier League, or whether or not those four teams that have been battling down there for most of the season are going to be stuck there on their own. Another team who won at the weekend, Friday night, Watford, beaten at home by Norwich City. Yes, Norwich actually won a game, 3-0. And I tell you what, they couldn't wait to pile in on Crookie on Twitter. They were loving it. And you search Alex Crook's name on Friday night, it's never been trending so much. Are we an embarrassment now, said one wag. Well, they weren't actually, were they, on Friday night? But I didn't think they had a particularly good first half, I must admit. But yeah, second half, much better. Here's a question for you, Matt. Top professional, you know the drill. Josh Sargent, where did that come from?
Amazing, isn't it? Absolutely amazing. I'll tell you what, I enjoyed the first goal, improvised, the back heel. But I actually preferred the second in lots of ways. The way he came and attacked that ball, desperate to get on the end of it. He's a player that every time I've watched him, He works incredibly hard, but just looks as though he lacks that bit of composure, bit of finesse, a bit of quality in the final third. So in lots of ways, because of his attitude, because of the way he works, I was really pleased for him that he got those two goals. And the set of the two, I really liked the second one where he came and attacked it. But yeah, it's unbelievable result, a horror result for Watford. If Claudio Ranieri survives this, I'll be majorly surprised. You know, the way that Watford changed managers, I saw a great line the other day. It was Nick Jamie Carragher said that there's only Watford changes managers more often than you do to Gary. That's what he said to Gary Neville, of course, the Salford. So I really thought that was quite funny, but. You know, I'd be amazed if Ranieri survives this one.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to, is he? I mean, he's going to get fired this week.
Yeah, I think the search is already underway for his successor. We know the way that Watford like to do business is not leaving too much of a gap between getting rid of one manager and then getting the next man in. Maybe it's time for Kike Sanchez Flores to return. I think Fabio
hasn't been back this season, has he? Yeah, getting back.
I think Fabio Cannavaro might be a more likely candidate. We know he has a good relationship with the Pozzo family and was in for the Everton job, which looks like he's now going to Vitor Pereira.
What has he done to be in for the Everton job? What's he done to be in the Watford job? Wasn't he coach? Where was he coaching last?
I think he was coaching in the Middle East, wasn't he?
I'm not sure that. I've met Fabio a few times. Obviously, a brilliant player, wonderful player, World Cup winner, obviously. But I mean, his command of the English language, actually, first of all, was not very good when I spoke to him. Although you could say, well, Bielsa doesn't speak English, so that's not a prerequisite for being a Premier League manager. But I don't know. He's never really struck me as a particularly commanding figure. As far as a manager is concerned,
I think what's interesting about the Ranieri situation was the language that he used after the game. He accused his players of being, quote, selfish, and I think that does suggest some dressing room unrest.
Fracture.
Just looking at Cannavaro's career, he was last in China, actually. He did have a spell as assistant manager out in the Middle East. It's not a brilliant coaching CV, it has to be said.
Al Ahly, Guangzhou, Al Nasir, Tianjin, Guangzhou, Guangzhou and China. He's not managing the top any top no. league, is he? I mean,
but this is history repeating for Watford, and I know their fans have been fairly staunch in their defence of the Pozzo family, because they would argue that to a point the revolving door that they have when it comes to managers has paid off. It didn't pay off when they were last in the Premier League. Three managers in one season, they went down. They're likely to have three managers this season. And I think they'll probably go down again.
Okay, well, you say they might go down. They're in the bottom three along with Burnley, Newcastle. They're in the bottom three at the moment. Norwich just out of it with 16 points. Notice he hasn't really mentioned Norwich. Do you know why that is, Matt? Because on Friday night he went out with his pool buddies. He's in a pool league, obviously, because that's, you know, what a normal person does every Friday night. And he avoided the game because he was so scared of the backlash that he was going to get from the Norwich City support. Right, okay, still seven games to come.
And just 2 points separated the top three at bedtime on December the 4th. All on equal game, 15 games. Well, that two-point gap could be 15 points by bedtime tonight. Into the path of Nathan Redmond with a crossing chance. Back to Walker Peters. Inside the box. Inside the net. Southampton have taken the lead. And Brocia has controlled it and got behind Walker. And it's Armando Brocia. And it's Southampton 2, Manchester City 0. No, it is not. Flag has been raised. Slipped in low. Big chance for Sterling. Fabulous save by Forster. Raheem Sterling really should have scored from the right-hand side. Towards the head of Salisu, chance for Brozier, he's hit a post and then it's smashed over by Bednarek. It's taken by De Bruyne, it's an outswinger, it's a great chance and Laporte has equalised, a free header, Manchester City are back on terms. Lovely interchange out as far as Kevin De Bruyne, tries to curl one, oh, hit the outside of the post, De Bruyne.
Oh, unlucky, I mean, he didn't have a lot to aim at there, he could barely see the post, he knew where the goal was, trying to bend it back in.
Might be a little bit too long, this one, from Medicine. It's bounced for De Bruyne, he turns it goalwards.
Fantastic save there from Forster. They didn't know too much about it, though.
They feel as if they're almost there. They are there! Bump in the road for the Rolls-Royce at the top of the Premier League table. Southampton 1, Manchester City 1.
Manchester City's 12-game winning run is over. Have they shown enough in the last 90 minutes against Southampton that has encouraged everybody else to give them hope that we might still have a title race?
Not really.
The gap's only 9 points.
12 wins in a row. That
11 points.
They were going to drop points at some stage. I think it took an awful lot of effort and endeavour from Southampton to get that result. You can see with the way that Ralph Hasenhüttl, never shy of showing his emotions on the touchline, celebrated at full time. It felt like a victory to him. I thought there were some outstanding Southampton performances, not least Mohamed Salah, who really is now starting to look like the £50 million player that some at St Mary's believe he will be. I think he's out of contract in 2024. I'm sure they'll try and extend it in the summer. So, yeah, listen, from a neutral perspective, we want to see a title race. I would still be surprised if Manchester City drop enough points in their final 15 matches to really give us one.
Pep doesn't like talking about the title race. It's your job. I don't want to talk about it. He was in a spiky mood again after the game. I mean, can they be caught? What do you think, Matt? What's your view on it? I mean, does it show, because he is a bit spiky, that he feels, oh, it's not done, and he's getting irritated with everybody asking him those questions?
Of course they can be caught. I don't think they'll be caught, because I think they're too strong, too good for everybody else in the league. But they can. I mean, look, that's a difficult place to go, Southampton. They've unbeaten now, I think, in 8 games in the Premier League at St Mary's. So it's proved to be a difficult place to go and get a result. And they did knock on the door, Man City, let's be honest. They were the knocking the door down, didn't quite manage to break it. But I thought it was a terrific defensive effort from Southampton. Didn't have a lot of the ball, but they were compact, organised, and Salisu was brilliant. Wonderful goal from Kyle Walker-Peters to set them off and running. But Man City did everything but score the winner. Still questions to be asked over Jack Grealish. Is he influencing the game often enough? He only had 50-odd touches, whereas Foden and De Bruyne both had 90-odd. You know, it just goes to show that those more of the creative players, there's other players that are influencing the game more than Jack Grealish is. So he's still got questions to answer with regard to that. And Pep was a bit prickly after the game. It was quite funny when he was asked about it. Said, great performance. Best performance so far.
He always says that.
It just deflects a little bit away from the fact that they've dropped points. But let's not forget, they've just won 12 on the spin. This is a minor bump in the road. It's
Matt, you won't be able to forget. He will tell you over and over again. And if you even question for one, I mean, it's a bit annoying actually talking to him on post-match. And I know I've mentioned this before, because, and I think I understand it now. He sort of looks at the global body of work that he does and assesses that from a very lofty position. I get it. He doesn't look at the little minutiae detail of game after game. He looks over a longer period of time and assesses whether they're doing well or not doing well over that period, rather than just focusing on one individual game. But when you're doing a post-match interview, obviously the job is to dissect what happened in the actual game, and he does not like doing that. It is just one defeat in 7 for Southampton, so they're on a good run. And Armstrong on Laporte. Laporte, I think, put a Instagram post out which showed a huge gash down the side of his leg. Now, was that
That was the Armstrong tackle, wasn't it? I mean, certainly the wound looks like it could be a red card offence. Again, when I saw this on TV on Saturday night or Sunday morning, whenever we were catching up, I kind of felt like I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. But again, Matt Holland, former tough tackling midfielder himself, what's your view?
No, I'm a bit like you. I'm sort of giving the benefit of the doubt as well. It wasn't a huge contact on Laporte. That stub mark that he's put out on Twitter, that's something I used to get every game. Used to get those every match, honestly. I mean, it's like...
it's different on. Now, though.
Matt, yeah, different now. Used to get those every single match. So, no, I was erring towards giving the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Okay, 9 points is the gap between Liverpool and Manchester City, but Liverpool do have a game in hand, so that could be just 6 points. And they've got to play Manchester City as well. Anything can happen. Honestly, we've still got a title race. Believe, everybody. Believe. Because if Liverpool can go and play like they did against Crystal Palace and come away with what looked like a sizable victory, then anything can happen, because they reduced the gap at the top of the Premier League table after a hard-fought win at Selhurst Park. But it was a tough one to take for Patrick Vieira. It was very one-sided at the start, and literally Liverpool blew them away for 20, 30 minutes. Ox scores the second goal. Van Dijk powered a header in from a corner. At one point, we thought, this is going to be 9. I mean, this is terrible. But then Palace, turn the tide. And they had three chances in the first half, including Mateta's great chance just before the break. Elise had a chance straight after the half-time whistle with the ball fired across the goal. And it could have been. It could have turned round. Then there was the controversial penalty.
It's never been a penalty. I just don't. I don't see what he's seen. Kevin Friend, the referee, was advised after an eternity, felt like an eternity, to go and have a look at the screen. The VAR was saying that he felt that Jota would have got onto the end of the ball after he was clattered into by Guaita. Well, I mean, unless he's Usain Bolt, I don't see how he would have got it before the ball was going out of play. It looked as though he's initiated the contact into Guaita. Kevin Friend saw it in real time and felt it wasn't a penalty. Mm-hmm. I wish that the referees could have courage in their convictions to go over to the monitor and say, I don't see what you've seen up in the VAR at Stockley Park. I saw it at the time. I saw it in real time. I've just seen it on the replay. I don't see a penalty because, look, I think 99 people out of 100 would say it's not a penalty. Of course, there's always somebody will say it is because there is contact, there's a coming together. But I think the majority would say it's no penalty. And I just wish referees would have a bit more courage when they go to the monitor to say, no, sorry, that's not what I've seen.
Because it's changed the nature of the game because, you know, obviously it's 2-1 at that point. Edouard had scored a goal, so Palace were within one goal of Liverpool. The tide had turned a little bit. There was every chance they might nick a late equaliser in that match. That penalty goes the way of Liverpool and it takes that comeback away. Now, it looks to me like an incident of them re-refereeing the game because Kevin Friend has obviously decided that it isn't a penalty. And then someone, it's not clear and obvious. There's no way you can say that that is clear and obvious. And Patrick Vieira was absolutely furious afterwards. He said, I think we've given ourselves the best chance to get something from the game. But obviously that decision by the ref took that hope away. The poor decision from the referee took our hope away. The reason is having those meetings with the referee and explaining to coaches that contact is part of the game. So if there is a situation like that and it's not obvious contact, there will not be a penalty. That's what we're told. This one here, when you look at the situation with Jota, who I believe is really quite smart, but at the same time the referee was naive, or the VAR was naive. There is no way that Jota can get the ball back and score, or that Vincent tried to stop him. There is no way that Vincent and Jota cannot have contact because of the situation they are in, and he sort of explained that pretty perfectly. But it is another situation of Crystal Palace doing very well in the game and not coming away with anything, mainly because they've had a very bad start.
Yeah, story of their season. Really, they are slow to get going. They seem to get better after half-time, as they did in this one. But just back to the penalty incident, it comes down to consistency again, or inconsistency. Because there was the incident earlier in the season, if you remember, Manchester City against Newcastle. Edison, for me, completely wiped out Ryan Fraser.
Yeah.
No penalty. Minimal contact here, which was probably actually instigated by Jota. Penalty. Doesn't make any sense. I'm with Matt. And it did change the course of proceedings. Who knows whether Palace might have got back in the game without that error of judgment by the officials.
What did you think of Palace?
I thought they were, after they got to grips with the game, and it did take them half an hour because I thought Liverpool were brilliant. The first half an hour is as good as I've seen Liverpool play this season. I thought they were outstanding. But as the game wore on, Crystal Palace started to get in behind Liverpool. Liverpool played an incredibly high line, as they so often do. And Palace started to time their runs, getting behind the Liverpool defence. And I thought they were very good. They continued to try and play out from the back. We've seen this change of style from Patrick Vieira this season. Let me ask you two about Crystal Palace. Do you think they're a better side this year than last season? Because I do. I'd much rather go and watch Crystal Palace this season than watching them last year. The way they're playing, they're progressive. They changed the profile of the team, as in the age is much younger now. There's a hunger, there's a desire about them. They're a better team to watch. They're passing the ball more, they're having more possession. They've scored more goals than they had at this stage last season. But last season, after 22 games, they had 29 points. They've got 24 points now. So has there been progress? I think there has, even though they're 5 points down. But many people will look at that and go, oh, we were in a better shape last year.
I think it's about playing the long game because you mentioned there they've got young players and you know that from young players, mistakes are going to be made. Look at the first goal today, Joachim Andersen running into his own man, allowing Van Dijk that free header. But I think there are parallels here between when Brighton, Palace's arch rivals, got rid of Chris Hughton And again, his first season in charge, I think he was actually underperforming Chris Hughton in terms of points per game. Look at Brighton now, much more pleasing on the eye. Suddenly they're up there challenging for a European place. I think Palace fans will be patient because they're enjoying what they're watching. And I think in the long haul, Patrick Vieira will prove to be a very good Crystal Palace manager.
Yeah, I agree with you. And he's changed the profile of the squad, as you mentioned. You know, some of the new faces have done very, very well. Elise, for example, is going to be a fine talent. Gerhi, again, made a mistake for the first goal, but he's going to be a very good central defender going forward. And it gives Palace hope. You know, if they keep adding to that over the next couple of transfer windows, they've got an opportunity to build something. And Patrick himself, you know, he's made them more watchable. And you can say what you like about it. I mean, if you're a Crystal Palace fan, you'd rather watch a team that had 24 points at this stage, but you enjoyed going to the games, rather than going to watch a Roy Hodgson team, with all due respect to Roy, just sent you to sleep. I mean, they were rubbish. They were so dull. You wouldn't want to watch them. Season ticket sales wouldn't have gone up. If Roy Hodgson would still been in charge, it would have gone down. Patrick Vieira brings a bit of star quality as well. I think it's a good move. It's worked out. Maybe not as much as they would have hoped. Maybe it's already better than they would have hoped. But I think it will get, over the course of time, even more progressive, and they're on an upward trajectory. Leicester drew with Brighton 1-1. Patson Daka scoring again. And then Brighton hitting back again. Late on, another late draw. I mean, they draw so often, don't they? I mean, I made a joke in the preview podcast that they draw as often as a toddler with a new set of crayons. But they do. They're always drawing games, and they've got a bit of fighting spirit about them.
Yeah, and they win a lot of points late on. So, listen, they don't want to keep falling behind, but it shows great character. They managed to keep coming back. Danny Welbeck again with a crucial late goal at the end of that game. And Lewis Dunk back in the squad. That'll be a bonus for them. Although at the moment, when you look at the form of Dan Byrne and Adam Webster, it's actually difficult to see how Lewis Dunk gets back into the team. And I think that shows you just how much Brighton have improved as a football club and how much more strength and depth they have. Byrne has been absolutely sensational this season, not least in midweek when he looked like Paolo Maldini against Romelu Lukaku. And Webster, I think, is someone who should be being talked about in terms of the England squad.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
No goals at the Emirates Stadium. Arsenal against Burnley. Oh, Arsenal haven't scored since New Year's Day when they lost to Manchester City. 329 Premier League minutes without scoring a goal. I mean, that is quite worrying for Mikel Arteta. I mean, he does go through these periods where everyone says, oh yes, I can see it, it's all coming together. And then very quickly, the whole season collapses in 1 month, as it always does with Arsenal in January. Because now, they've got absolutely zip all to play for. Yes, they're in the top six. They might get European football, but it will be Europa League, not Champions League, I would have thought. And, you know, there's just not enough in that squad, is there?
It's been a damaging week for Arsenal. I thought it was a massive opportunity to get to a cup final with no Salah, no Mane. They didn't take that opportunity. And you look at the Aubameyang situation now, there's a possibility that he may move to Saudi Arabia between now and the end of the transfer window. Who's going to replace him? You know, they're after Dusan Vlahovic at Fiorentina. He's at the moment shown no inclination to join Arsenal, mainly because he wants to be playing Champions League football next season. He doesn't think they'll be there. I don't think they'll be there either. So you're down to Lacazette and Nketiah. And Nketiah, for me, if you want to be serious contenders for the top four, you don't rely on Eddie Nketiah as your backup striker. So they need to do some serious business between now and the end of the window. I think Arteta came out after the game and said they were finding it very difficult to pin players down. They want Artur from Juventus, but that isn't really moving forward either.
Well, I mean, they could have not loaned out exactly. some of the players they already had,
yeah,
which might have been a better idea. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but probably best not to get rid of players until you've got replacements in the door.
It's been a bizarre transfer window for Arsenal, and unless they've got some rabbits to pull out of the hat, I think they're struggling.
It's been an awful start to 2022, out of both cups. The only thing they have got to play for is Europe and trying to finish in the top four. But I look at their bench today, and you just talked about the strength and depth at Arsenal. Look at Arsenal's bench this weekend, and then compare it to Man United against West Ham this week. The three subs that came off the bench that combined for the United winner. So Martial, Cavani, Rashford. They were the three subs that Man United brought on and eventually won the game, took them into the top four. Arsenal's bench. Have a look at Arsenal's bench. It's not strong enough in depth. That's the big problem for Mikel Arteta.
Tavares, who he fell out with and dragged off 35 minutes into an FA Cup game. Chambers, who obviously they've been trying to get rid of for a long time. And Nketiah, we've mentioned. Alabiosi, I've got to be honest, and I've done a lot of Arsenal, and I've even done some of their youth team games. I don't know who he is. BRF, he hasn't played. Salahuddin, Hutchinson and Patina are all kids. They're all teenagers. And you're right. I mean, it exposes a lack of depth. It exposed a very small squad. I understand they wanted to get high wage earners off the payroll earlier in the season. I know that they wanted to try and get rid of some of the dead wood, but you've got to get through the season. And Arsenal are going to go through what is now what? Is it two full seasons under Mikel Arteta, where they haven't really moved much further forward than they were under the previous manager, who, by the way, left after getting them to a cup final.
And Matt's absolutely right to draw parallels with Manchester United, because United have got a lot of fringe players who maybe they could let go out on loan. Jesse Lingard, we know, is wanted by Newcastle. I think West Ham and Tottenham have also made approaches. Dean Henderson, there was one stage when Cavani looked like he might leave. Ralph Rangnick, to be fair, has been quite steadfast. He doesn't want to let players go. He thinks they need as deep a squad as possible. It's almost the complete opposite of what Arsenal are doing, and it's highlighted, as Matt has said, by the gap in quality on the two benches.
Okay, let's talk about Manchester United. They played West Ham. We talked Brentford Wolves as well, and Everton against Aston Villa.
Duncan Ferguson is in charge of Everton against Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa. Mings upfield it goes, bounces once on the edge of the area, then Mina heads it over his own goalkeeper, and Pickford has to turn around and scurry back and pick it up. Ramsey back to halfway, and Mings down the left side of the box looking for Watkins, is in behind, takes it on, beats the goalkeeper, who comes out and gets a big hand on it to steer it behind. Touch back to Buendia, who's crossed from the far post, and Watkins is unmarked. What a save by Pickford with his foot. Ball towards the far post, oh, it's flicked on by Buendia, and across the goalkeeper and in. And Aston Villa, who've had the best chances in this first 45 minutes, have scored in stoppage time at the end of the first half. It's half cleared by Mings, comes back to Gordon, delivers it into the box, flicked by Richarlison over the top of the crossbar. A ball sent wide to Anthony Gordon, who's sprinting away, produces a cross, Calvert-Lewin's there, and he's leaning back, and he gets under the ball, and he takes it right over the top of the crossbar. It was a scrap, but it was a scrap that Aston Villa won. Buendia's goal, the only goal of the game. It's finished Everton 0, Aston Villa 1.
Everton 0, Aston Villa 1. Emi Buendia, the smallest man on the park, scoring a header at the near post and giving all 3 points to Steven Gerrard's team. He won more games against Everton than any other team as a player, and he couldn't stop smiling about it. He had a big smile on his face when he came and spoke to me after the game, and also when he was doing, I think he was doing like a dummy sort of gesture to the Everton fans because they were spitting their dummy out. A few of them stayed after the game to sort of shout out about sacking the board because it is actually a dreadful, I mean, it was a dreadful match. It was a terrible situation at Everton anyway, behind the scenes. But it was a terrible football match. It was very, very scrappy. It was a proper battle. There wasn't much quality in it, to be honest with you. And Duncan Ferguson certainly got his work cut out. But the Everton situation is a tricky one, isn't it? Because Farhad Moshiri spent a hell of a lot of money. He's constrained by financial fair play. I mean, Mikulenko had COVID, I think, which is why he wasn't in the squad. But they played Ben Godfrey at left back. Patterson wasn't in the squad. I'm guessing he had COVID, because there's no reason otherwise that you would sanction two signings like that and then not have them in the match day squad. They've got a real restructuring job to do, Matt.
God, blimey, where do you start? Where do you start, really, with Everton? Look, they huffed and puffed. They had a go in the second half. I don't think you can fault them for their effort. And as poor as they were in the first half, they were much better in the second. 6 points from 42. It's just a horrible, horrible run. So that's one win and three draws, I think, from the last 14 matches. It just goes to show that things are in a bad situation at Everton. Unrest in the crowd. They, you know, sack the board banners. It's just a horrible place to be at the moment.
With all due respect to Bill Kenryon, he's done some great things over the years at Everton. The idea that he still does the player negotiations or is in charge of recruitment, he's running the club almost, it feels like, on a day-to-day basis. I know that they've got a CEO, that Denise, the CEO, is also very much involved in it. But it feels like, from what Farhad Moshiri said during his open letter to club supporters this weekend, that he's just given everything over to Bill. It's time now for him to walk away. And that was very much the tone of what the fans were saying after the match. I mean, Duncan Ferguson did his best. He bought everybody a pint in the pubs around the ground beforehand. But even then, the atmosphere wasn't terrific. I just don't know where they go from here. I know Pereira obviously has been mentioned now, and we think he's going to get the job. But they need a director of football. They need someone to do the recruitment. They've got no head of recruitment. They've got no head of sports science. They've got no head of scouting at the moment. I mean, all of those positions have to change.
Yeah, listen, I have some sympathy because Farhad Moshiri has put his money where his mouth is. It's not been well spent, but that's not necessarily his fault, although I think he does sometimes have a bigger say in transfers maybe than that open letter suggested. And Bill Kenryon is somebody who really has been the custodian of that football club for a number of years, so clearly he's got the club's best interests at heart as well. And I think it's quite a sad situation when fans are flying planes over the stadium telling him that it's time to go. There was one bit of good news for Everton at the weekend. Nigeria knocked out the African Cup of Nations, so Alex Iwobi, who was sent off 7 minutes after coming on, will be back to bolster the squad, so that'll be good news.
Let's talk about Manchester United. They beat West Ham by a goal to nil, a late Marcus Rashford goal. Mickey Gray on game day on TalkSport waxing lyrical. Best performance under Rangnick, he said. One defeat in 13. It hasn't always felt like that, has it really? But, you know, it's the first time they've managed two in a row under the German boss. Ronaldo had chances. He had a header in the first half. Zuma, the challenge on him, possibly. Was that a penalty? I'm not sure. But look, they forced Areola into a couple of saves. Probably should have scored before they did. But it's the fourth time in Premier League, his Premier League career, that Marcus Rashford's got a 90th minute winner in the Premier League for Manchester United. And it's good to see him scoring again, Matt.
Well, he'd had a bad run. I think he'd gone 11 games without a goal. And I was at the Brentford game, actually, in midweek. He was somebody that desperately needed a goal for his confidence. Backed it up with another one off the bench this weekend against West Ham. I did think United were a better side. I think they are starting now to find some rhythm. I like the slight tweak in midfield with one holding midfield player, two number eights. I think that's been better for them. Certainly getting Fernandes in the middle of the pitch has been much better, because he's looked wasted when he's been playing in one of those wide positions. So getting him in the middle of the pitch has helped them. West Ham disappointed me in lots of ways in the way they approached the game. And I understand they're going to Old Trafford. They're in a good position in the league. But I don't think they showed enough adventure. I don't think they showed enough to go on and hurt Man United. You know, Man United in the position that they're in, and you're right, the results have been a bit better of late, but they've still looked a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit susceptible. And you felt as though this was a game where West Ham could make a bit of a statement. And I thought they were not positive enough in the way that they attacked the game. Whether that's, you know, a bit of David Moyes, he's not got a great record away at the big six clubs. I think it's a long time since he won away at one of the big six, but I just felt they were a bit negative in their approach. United definitely deserved to win, and I think the bench made the difference as well. Still got Sancho to come back onto that bench as well, maybe start, who knows, but they just look really good in terms of their depth. And a quick word on Declan Rice. He was the best player on the pitch. I watched the game and I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And his quotes after the game actually were interesting. I always enjoy playing at Old Trafford. I don't know if that was a message to say, oh, I quite like it here at Man United, or certainly at Old Trafford. We'll see.
Yeah, he was impressive, screening the defence. I think you'll probably, we were talking about this last night, we think he'll probably move in the summer. He's got to move if he wants to kick on to that next level. Antonio's goals have dried up a little bit. That's a problem. One shot on target for West Ham. There's still a big threat from set pieces, but it has been a little bit dry in front of goal for Antonio for probably far too long. Look, we've been droning on for so long. We've got to get to our final match, Brentford against Wolves, which is ironic because drone stop play is a new one on me. And certainly it did during the game. I mean, what are you doing? Why are you flying a drone into a football ground? Have you got nothing better to do on a Saturday afternoon? I mean, I just don't get it. But anyway, the worst thing about it was is that once it has happened and someone stopped a game, you're now going to get people doing it all the time.
I've got some good footage though, Sam. I've got some, you know, off the drone, I've got some good footage. Oh, sorry, was not meant to say that, was I?
He wanted to shoot it down, Sam. That was his solution.
Absolutely.
To the problem. Let's talk about the football. Some excellent goals in that game. And I've been looking actually in terms of the Premier League form table. Wolverhampton Wanderers right up there. If you look at the teams who are ahead of them in the form table, Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal, the only four sides ahead of Wolves in the form table. I've said it before, Bruno Large has done a terrific job there. Yeah. It looks like Adama Traore will be on his way to Tottenham. Maybe Bruno Large will have some funds to spend. I think Renato Sanchez is still a player very much on their radar, and that would be another fantastic addition. Can we say that Wolves are European competitors? Yes, are you okay with that?
I think you're in the right zone there, because they're only 2 points off the European places. Only 3 points behind West Ham, but have two games in hand on them. So there's every chance that they could pit Manchester United to a European place. Yeah, you're right.
What do you want to talk about?
No, the only thing is at the top of the programme, you said we talk about Christian Eriksen.
Oh, we should talk about Christian Eriksen. We haven't mentioned it. It was broken on Sunday morning on TalkSport that Christian Eriksen's deal to Brentford is done, or just about to be done. So he will be playing in the Premier League, it looks like. And it's a great story, isn't it? A feel-good story. The rules in this country allow him to play with his defibrillator in his chest. It's not allowed in Italy, but it is allowed here as long as he has a cardiac screening. It's a feel-good story.
It is a feel-good story. I think there's still a little way to go, because I think there's quite an extensive medical plan. Actually, they don't need to sign him by the transfer deadline, because he is a free agent, so it could go past that point. But yeah, listen, it's anybody who loves football will have been touched by the Christian Eriksen story. Harrowing scenes he went down in that game against Finland at the European Championships. He's got a burning desire to make his comeback on the biggest stage at the World Cup, and we certainly hope he can get there. And I guess Brentford's a good fit with a Danish manager in Thomas Frank, a couple of Danish players in the squad as well, and maybe a chance just to go about his business quietly as opposed to joining one of the more established clubs in the Premier League.
Yeah, good luck to him. Good luck to Brentford. I thought they were brilliant in the game on Wednesday night when they played Manchester United. They just didn't have the finishing touch. The first half of that game, I thought they were excellent. And Thomas Frank's just a brilliant character. One of the best characters in the Premier League. He got sent off at the end of the game for confronting the referee. And he came out afterwards, did an interview in which he's talked about it and said, you know what, I tell my players to keep their emotions in check. I probably should have done the same. So I'm sorry about that. Hands up. I won't do it again. I thought, fair play to the fella. Right, Matt, thank you very much. Enjoyed that.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. See you soon.
Right, that's it from us. We'll be back after the international break. Thank you for tuning in to the Game Day podcast. We've appreciated it. Keep downloading our podcast from everywhere you usually get your podcasts. And you can use our TalkSport app as well.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.